Let's have another cup of Lipton tea.
Lipton tea and Lipton soup present Arthur Godfrey and his talent scouts.
Here comes Arthur Godfrey, your talent scout MC. Brought to you by Lipton's brisk Lipton tea. You know it's Lipton tea. If it's B-R-I-S-K, you know it's Arthur Godfrey when you hear them play.
Seems like old times, having you to walk with. Seems like old times. Thank you. Thank you, George Brian. Peggy Marshall in the Holidays. Archie Blyer in the orchestra, and a special welcome to you folk who are kind enough to come to the studio tonight to help us pick a winner. Greetings to you one and all. Well, we've got a bunch of talented folks here tonight, so let's get right to it. It's Lipton soup and tea time for our talent scout. The first one is Al Shargill. Is that right, Al? Did I pronounce that right?
It's Shargill.
Shargill, huh? Al Shargill. What do you do for a living, Al?
Drive a truck.
Drive a truck, huh? What kind of truck?
Oh, big.
Big. What do you haul in the truck?
General trucking, mostly printed matter.
Oh, I see. Is it your own truck, or do you work for...
I work for my uncle.
Oh, your uncle. Well, what's the name of his company? Let's give him a buzz here.
S and F.
S and F. That's enough about the trucking business. Did you bring us any talent, Al?
Yes, I did.
Well, who have you got with you?
My cousin, Elizabeth Ferguson.
Okay, your cousin, Elizabeth Ferguson.
We call it Tessie.
Tessie, well, that's nice. Where does Tessie come from, Al?
She's from a little tiny town in the South.
Oh, I love the South. Virginia, especially. Is she from Virginia?
No, she's from...
Where has she been performing, and what is she going to do for us this evening?
Mostly she's been singing at her church, but a few other little places in the area, too. I saw her sing one time in a little joint called Maisie's when I was coming through with my truck.
Well, fine. Let's take a listen to what she can do. Let's bring her out here now, Elizabeth Ferguson. Elizabeth Ferguson, folks. Wow, she sure has a set of pipes on her. Beautiful. Tessie Ferguson, folks. Isn't this a cute hat, huh? Someone sent me a little fireman's hat, fire chief, with little tea bags hung all around it here. So, in case the hose plays on me, it shouldn't be a total loss. I'll have some tea. I wish you folks out there on the radio could see this. It's really something to see. Can I give it to you, young fella?
Yeah, put it on here. Let's see how it looks on you.
Oh, that's cute. Isn't this PU weather we're having here? And continued PU. And baseball season's about to start. Can you imagine what those fields will look like, huh? The guy will lay down a bunt and slide all the way to third base with the mud. I'm ready for some summer sunshine. How about you folks? So I've been asked Peggy Marshall in the Holidays to bring in some of that summertime sun. Here they are. Another talent scout here. How do you do?
How do you do?
Now, what's your name, Mrs. Masters?
Miss Masters.
Miss Sally Masters.
That's right.
Tell me who you brought with you tonight. Where'd you come from?
Freeport.
Freeport, huh? Who'd you bring with you?
My brother.
Your brother. Well, we've got all the relations here this evening. Uncles, nephews, cousins. What does your brother do?
He's an actor and a singer.
An actor and a singer. What's his name?
Guy Masters.
Guy Masters. What's his professional background?
Well, he's done a variety of roles in a number of cities around the Northeast. He started out in vaudeville. Our parents were an act on the stage for years. Masters and Masters. Lately, he's done a lot of summer stock around the circuit up in the Catskills and has quite a following up there.
Oh, wonderful. Sounds like your brother is a talented fellow. What's his name again?
Guy Masters.
Guy Masters. Well, let's bring him on. Thank you, Miss Masters.
Reuben, Reuben, I've been thinking, said his wifey dear. Now that all is peaceful and calm, the boys will soon be back on the farm. Mr. Reuben started winking and slowly rubbed his chin. He pulled his chair up close to Mother and he asked her with a grin, how you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've seen Perry? How you gonna keep 'em away from Broadway, jazzing around and painting the town? How you gonna keep 'em away from harm? That's a mystery. They'll never want to see a rake or plow, and who the deuce can parley-voo a cow? How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've seen Perry? How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've seen Perry? How you gonna keep 'em away from Broadway, jazzing around and painting the town? How you gonna keep 'em away from harm? That's a mystery. Imagine Reuben when he meets his pa. He'll kiss his cheek and holler, ooh la la. How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've seen Perry?
Guy Masters. Well, that was great. And a great tribute to a perennial favorite, Eddie Cantor, huh, folks? Thank you, Guy.
NBC presents Short Story. Tonight, Shirley Jackson. She's a novelist and short story writer, master of the sunny mood that turns to terror in a single sentence. But her statements are not dark for the sake of darkness, rather for the bitter truth that's in them. Shirley Jackson. Tonight, one of the most dramatic and horrifying of the Shirley Jackson stories, The Lottery by Shirley Jackson.
Summers, you get up out of that bed.
Oh, it ain't 7 yet.
Of course it ain't. Now you get up, you hear? It's lottery day.
Now, Dickie, you eat your cereal.
I don't want no more, Mom.
You eat up your cereal because you ain't going to have nothing but sandwiches till supper time.
Aw, sandwiches.
You heard me. I'm not going to cook no 3 hot meals on lottery day.
All right, Davy, that's enough for the chickens.
Shoo! Shoo!
Come on now, son. We've got to hoard hay down for the cows. We won't be back all day.
Ma coming too? Just like Sunday for church?
Yeah, that's right. All folks from the town line will be in today for the lottery.
I can't find my collar stud. Who took my collar stud?
Now, just don't fret, grandsire. It's around here somewhere.
If I can't find my collar stud, I ain't going. 77 lotteries I've been to. Never missed a one. Laura, you find my collar stud. You hear?
The morning of June 27th was clear and sunny, with the fresh warmth of a full summer day. The flowers were blossoming, and the grass on the town green in front of the bandstand was a nice, warm summer green. The folks in the village and the farmers inside the township line began to gather in the square between the post office and the bank by about 10 o'clock. School was out for the summer, and the kids came in early to chase around the board sidewalks the way kids will.
1, 2, 3.
Bobby Martin and Harry Jones were sitting in front of the post office, swapping stones. Bobby had his pockets full already, nice, smooth, round ones. The girls stood aside, talking among themselves and looking over their shoulders at the boys, and the very small children rolled in the dust or clung to the hands of their older brothers and sisters.
Morning, John.
Morning, Mr. Summers.
Nice day for the lottery, ain't it?
Yes.
They had rain yesterday up to the North Village. They got to start the lottery a day ahead to get it done. 200 families.
That right?
Yep, got to hustle to get the lottery over with up there. It won't take us more than maybe a couple of hours.
It seems longer.
That's the way it is with the lottery. I was talking it over with Mrs. Summers. It's a suspense, make time go slow.
Not slow enough.
You draw this year, don't you?
I guess so.
Yep, that's the rule, all right. Stranger in town draws his second year.
Morning, Mr. Summers. John?
Ma'am?
Morning, Mrs. Delacroix. In early, I see.
Well, I don't get up to the village often, George. Don't like to leave the stock. You going to have the store open after?
Most likely. Didn't used to be done.
Well, you got to be modern, I always say. Excuse me, won't you? Martinson's just got in. It's a nice day for it. You can say that for a fact.
go faster, Pa? We'll miss everything.
Oh, don't worry, Davy. We'll get there in plenty of time.
I want to go into summer store after to get some patterns. Elsie Dunbar told me he's got some new ones in for short-waisted figures.
Let's not talk about it, Tessa.
What do you mean? Well, I got that flowered stuff left over from last year, and if I can get a good pattern...
I don't want to talk about after.
Oh?
Come on, Pa! Can't we go no faster?
All right. Up there. Giddy up. Up there, up there. I was talking to John Gunderson.
The school teacher?
Mm-hmm. He's got a draw this year.
It's only right. Second year in town.
I told him I was thinking of packing up and moving out.
Bill Hutchinson, you crazy?
I told him I was going to pack the wagon, tie the stock onto the end of it, and just move out.
You mean just leave the farm?
That's right. I was going to do it before lottery day this year.
That's crazy, Bill. Where would you settle? Why, your folks have farmed that ground since heaven knows when.
Yeah, I know. I was going to just move out. It's too late now.
Oh, Bill, you talk the same way every year. No sense to it.
No, there's no sense to it.
A woman sees things like this, clearer. You just don't think about it, that's all. You come in for the lottery, then you go to Summers and buy something nice, talk to folks. Well, why don't you look at it that way, Bill?
Yeah, I suppose you're right. School teacher agreed with me, though. Go on, giddy up there.
That's the way, Pa. Hurry up, we'll miss all the fun!
Soon, the men began to gather, standing around, smoking, looking at the kids, talking about planting, rain, tractors, taxes, you know. Dickie Delacroix and a couple of kids had made a great big pile of stones in one corner of the square, and they were playing King of the Hill on it. The men stood together, away from the pile of stones, watching. Their jokes were quiet, and they smiled rather than laughed.
They're nice-looking folks, aren't they, John?
Yeah, they're nice.
You don't see them all together except on lottery day. Of course, there's Sunday in church, but some go to the Congregationalists and some to the Baptists, and folks like the Dunbars don't go nowhere.
Morning, Mr. Summers.
Morning, Tessie. I got those patterns in.
I'll be over right after.
John.
Morning, Bill.
I want to talk to you. Hello, Summers.
Morning. Don't worry about me. I got to see about the box and all for the drawing. Oh, morning, Charlie. How's the folk?
Well, it's the day.
Yeah. You going to draw?
I've got to. That's the rules.
You said you wouldn't. You sat there in the post office and said you wouldn't.
I know, but I'd have to leave town, and it isn't easy to get another school this late.
Well, anyways, you only draw for yourself. Tessie keeps talking about after. Starts me to sweating. She keeps talking about buying a pattern up to the summer store after. Short-waisted, she said.
I suppose you get used to it. I suppose if you've always had it, you don't think about it.
I don't. I lived in the village all my life. I don't get used to it.
Pa, can I stay with Dickie Delacroix? Can I stay with him?
No, you've got to stay with the family, Davy.
Pa, the other kid's got all the stones. Can't I stay with him?
Davy, I said... Davy, come here, Davy. David! Look at that. He's having all fun. All the kids are having fun. Why? That's what I want to know. Why?
You're a farmer. You know the answer.
You told me you couldn't find anything in the books says it has to be. Stands to reason you'd find it in the books, don't it?
This isn't my part of the country, Hutchinson. I don't make the rules.
Well, don't it stand to reason you could try to find out the truth? That's all I say.
You can't argue with the folks about the lottery. I've tried.
No, you can't argue with the folks. Well, anyways, it's a nice day for it.
It ain't right. I've been telling them year after year, it ain't right.
Now, grandsire, take it easy.
Now you listen to me, Floyd Summers. I'm the oldest man in the village. 77 years I've been in the lottery. 77 years.
Yeah, I know that, Mr. Warner, but you see...
Don't butt me. No, sir, don't butt me. I know what's right about the lottery. It ought to be chips of wood. one chip with the name of every family all in the big black box.
We can't do it that way, grandsire. You know that. The box ain't big enough.
That's the way it was when I was a boy. Chips of wood. None of these here bitty pieces of paper. Paper, huh? What kind of lottery you expect to have with paper?
Well, there's too many folks in the village for wood anymore.
Nobody pays any mind to the old ways. There ought to be marching, too. I remember marching and somebody sort of a chanting like. That's what there ought to be on lottery day.
Oh, that was a long time ago. Nobody remembers that anymore.
Yeah, that's the trouble. Nobody remembers. Now you take that black box.
It's cracking. We ought to make a new one.
A new one? Listen to him. A new box? Why, they used that box in my father's time for the lottery. And he told me it's made from the pieces of the box in his grandfather's time. Now you're supposed to be in charge of that box. Why, I saw it year before last lying in Graves' barn. And this year, it sat right on a shelf in your store. Now, is that any way to take care of that box? They don't run the lottery the way they used to. Hey, I've been in it 77 years, and I ought to know.
Tessie, come here.
What? Oh, excuse me, Mrs. Delacroix.
It's all right, Tessie.
Tessie.
What is it, Bill?
Where's Davy?
Playing with the other children there by the stones.
Get him over here.
Why?
We are hitching up and getting out.
Oh, we've got to wait for the drawing. We can't go now.
I said we're going now.
Oh, Bill, don't be silly. First place, we came all the way into the village for the lottery. Second place, summers won't be open till after. And I want to get those patterns.
After. Don't you understand? Suppose...
Bill, I'm surprised at you. Why, nobody else acts this way. You've just got to take it as it comes. You're a farmer, you know that.
What has that got to do with it?
Well, you didn't take on when the hog died of cholera before killing time. You just went on.
But that's different. It just happened. You can't help it if the stock gets sick.
See, that's what I mean.
You won't go.
No, I won't, and neither will you. I don't get into the village often, and lottery day is the one time I can see all the other women and talk, and I'm not going back till it's all over and supper time. My goodness, Bill, you'd think it was something unusual. Lottery comes every year. It always has.
The lottery was conducted, as were the square dances, the teenage club, and the Halloween program, by Mr. Summers, who had time and energy to devote to civic affairs. He was a round-faced, jovial man, and the people were sorry for him because he had no children and his wife was a scold. He was busy in the middle of the square with a little black box, setting it up and balancing it on a three-legged stool.
One of you folks want to give me a hand with the box, Mr. Martin?
All right, Floyd.
Here, just hold it on that corner. Steady there.
Watch his hands, Summers!
Now, we're going to do this fair and square, just like always. Now, last night up at the coal company office, Mr. Graves and I made up the slips of paper.
It ought to be chips of wood. What kind of piddling lottery can you have with slips of paper?
Now, grandsire, don't you interrupt Mr. Summers.
They're in the box here. Anybody wants to can haul them out and check them over. Time now for the swearing in. Mr. Graves will administer the oath to me. I expect, as usual, we'll waive election.
Didn't used to be no election. Used to pass from father to son.
All right. Do you, Floyd Summers, solemnly swear to carry out the duties of this lottery without fear, favor, prejudice, bias, or any other untold acts of omission or commission, so help you?
I do.
You tell him, Floyd.
Well, I expect now we're ready. We'll proceed as usual, drawing by family as according to the rules.
Wait a minute there, Floyd Summers.
Looks like another interruption. Oh, morning, Ms. Martin.
How do you like that? Clean forgot what day it was. Hello, Tessie.
Hi, Ms. Martin.
Thought my old man was out back stacking wood. Then I looked out the window and the kids was gone. And I remembered it was the 27th and came a-running. Did I miss anything?
Oh, you're in time. They're still talking away up there.
We was just beginning, Ms. Martin. Now you take your place with your family.
Hands still wet from the dishwater.
Well, now I guess we better get started. Let's get this over with so we can get back to work. Ain't everybody here? Huh? Well, now let's... this ain't the drawing. Just checking the list. Now, Adams? Adams? Well, glad to see you. I missed you last Saturday.
I guess you made it after all, huh, Ms. Martin?
Well, now, Tessie, between you and me, I knew it was lottery day, but you wouldn't have me leave the dishes in the sink now, would you?
Dunbar. Dunbar?
Where's Dunbar?
Dunbar, come on.
Who draws for Dunbar? Clyde broke his leg, didn't he? Now, who's drawing for him?
Well, I guess I draw.
Oh, that's right. That's the rule. Wife draws for husband. Except you got a grown boy to do it for you, haven't you, Janie?
Well, Horace is not but 16 yet. Guess I got to fill in for the old man this year.
All right. I got that checked. Watson boy drawing this year? Yeah? Oh, there you are, Charlie. Good to see your mother's got a man to do it. I suppose old man Warner's here.
You know darn well I'm here, Floyd Summers. I was just talking to you. I ain't missed a lottery in 77 years.
All right, grandsire, I was just joking. Well, that gets the list straight. All the rest is straight families. Unless anybody got anything to add, we're ready for the drawing. Now then, Adams, Adams. Yeah, hi, Steve. Just draw any one. Don't look at it till after. Next, Adamson. Adamson. Right, that does it. Anderson. Anderson.
It seems like they changed the order of the drawing again, don't it, Tessie?
Oh, no. That's the way it's always been.
Seems like there's just no time at all between lotteries anymore. Seems like we got through with the last one only last week. I declare the way time flies.
Time sure goes fast.
Delacroix. Delacroix.
There goes my old man.
Now, don't worry, Agnes.
Dunbar? Dunbar.
Why, that's you, Janie.
Well, if you ladies will excuse me.
Come on, Janie. You're holding us up.
Well, there she goes.
I'm coming.
Folks shouldn't hold up the lottery. It takes up a perfectly good morning as it is. Last year, I didn't get time for half the things I meant to do in town.
You're right, Tessie. My old man says he don't like lottery day because I always run the bill up at summer sky high.
Gunderson. John Gunderson.
There goes the schoolmaster.
I'm not going to draw, Mr. Summers.
Now, John, you know the rules. This is your second year in the village.
I know, but I'm not going to draw.
Now, don't be contrary, boy.
Everybody draws in the lottery. What makes you better, schoolmaster?
I don't believe in it.
Now, that isn't the point, John, and you know it.
Listen to him. He don't believe in the lottery. You hear that?
Now, take it easy, grandsire.
Why, we've always had a lottery. Everybody knows that. Always have and always will.
Over in the North Village, they're talking of giving up the lottery.
A pack of crazy fools in North Village. Listen to this idiot. Nothing's good enough for him. Next thing you know, they'll be wanting to go back to living in caves. Nobody work anymore, lived like that for a while.
They don't have the lottery up where I come from. They stopped it years ago.
Yeah, maybe so, but we ain't fools. Not here. Used to be a saying, lottery in June, corn'll grow soon. You listen to him with his books and ciphering. First thing you know, we'll all be eating stewed chickweed and acorns.
You're right, grandsire.
Yeah, sure. There's always been a lottery. Bad enough it ain't what it used to be, with Floyd Summers up there joking and all. But there's always been a lottery.
But why? Why? I tell you, they stopped it up north. More villages every year, and the corn grows just as high.
Nothing but trouble in that pack of fools.
Now, you ain't no farmer, Gunderson.
Old man Warner's right.
Yes, sir.
Lottery in June, corn will grow soon. That's the way it's always been.
You can't get around that, schoolmaster. Lottery in June.
But nobody knows. You've never tried. You just go on and on every year the same way.
You're darn tootin', and we're going right on just like we always done. What call has a young outsider to talk that way on lottery day? That's what I'd like to know.
Now, don't get raw, grandsire.
77 years I've been coming to lottery day.
But can't you see there's no reason for it? No reason. Year after year for generations on June 27th. Well, if you'd only think, if you'd only try, if you were willing to use reason instead of blind obedience to a crazy, outworn tradition.
That'll be about enough now, John. You spoke your piece. Now we better get down to business. Rules say if anybody balks, the committee draws for him. Now ain't that right, folks?
It certainly is. That's right.
Now I'm going to call you again, regular and proper. If you stand mute, we'll go right on and draw for you. Now which is it?
All right. All right, I'll go.
Fine. Fine. Now, let's get on. Hutchinson. Bill Hutchinson.
Now, get on up there, Bill. There goes your man, Tessie. Imagine the schoolmaster making such a fuss. He's no better than the rest. Everybody draws on lottery day.
All right, sir. Now, the last one. Warner.
Yes, sir. I'm right here.
All right, grandsire, take it easy, no rush.
This makes the 77th year I've been in the lottery. Yes, sir, 77 times.
Draw your slip now.
Yep.
All right, it's all done. Martin, close the box.
Well, who's got it? What family?
I ain't got it.
Grandsire, let me see your paper. Let me see it.
You let go of my hand, you hear? I can take care of myself.
Ma, is it us? Is it us, Ma?
Well, for goodness sake, what family is it? Who's got it?
All right, folks. Now, let's do this orderly. Come now, come on. Now, what family's got the black slip?
It's the Hutchinsons. Bill Hutchinson. Look, he's got it.
Peggy. You run and tell your father it's the Hutchinsons. Go on, run.
It isn't fair. It isn't fair. Floyd Summers, I saw you. You didn't give him time to take any slip he wanted. I saw you. It wasn't fair. Now, Tessie, be a good sport.
All of us took the same chance.
It isn't fair. I tell you, it isn't fair.
Shut up, Tessie.
Well, now, everybody, that was done pretty fast. Just 1 hour and 2 minutes. Now, we got to be hurrying a little more to get done before noon.
It wasn't fair.
Now, Bill, let's see. You draw for the Hutchinson family, don't you? You got any other households in the Hutchinsons?
There's Don and Eva. Make them take their chance. Make them draw.
Now, Tessie, Ava's your daughter, but she's married now. Daughters draw with their husbands' families. You know that as well as anyone else.
It wasn't fair. It wasn't fair.
I guess that's it, Floyd. My daughter draws with her husband's family. That's only fair.
Well, now, Bill.
I guess there's just us, Floyd, Davy, Tessie, and me.
All right, now. And as far as drawing for families is concerned, that's you. And as far as drawing for households is concerned, that's you, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Martin, you give me the tickets for the Hutchinsons, all three of them. You got their tickets back?
I got them. They're in the box, Floyd.
All set, then.
I think we ought to start over.
Now, Tessie.
I tell you, it wasn't fair. He didn't give him time enough to choose. Everybody saw that.
We have to get on now. Are you ready, Bill?
Listen, everybody, listen. You've got to listen. It wasn't fair. You could see that.
Ready, Bill?
Ready.
Davy picks first, then you, then Tessie. Now, you got that? Here, help little Dave.
Davy, come here.
Sure, Pa.
It wasn't fair, Mrs. Delacroix. You could see they didn't give him time.
Now, don't make a fuss, Tessie.
All right now, Bill. You take the slips and keep them folded till everybody picks. Come on, Davy.
Go on, son.
Now, Davy, I want you to pick a piece of paper out of this box and hold it tight. You understand?
Sure, Mr. Summers.
All right, pick now. Just one paper, Davy.
I got one.
Good. Now, you better hold it for him, Martin.
All set.
All right, Bill. One paper. That's right. Now, Tessie.
Oh, no. No, it wasn't fair.
Tessie, you've got to draw.
Come on, Tessie.
All right. All right.
I hope it ain't the child. Don't seem right.
Yeah, it's not the way it used to be. I tell you, it ought to be chips of wood. Lottery ain't like it used to be. People ain't the way they used to be.
Quiet now, folks. Now let's open the papers. Davy?
Come on, Davy. Open your paper.
There's nothing on it.
Well. Bill?
Mine's blank.
Then I guess it's Tessie.
Oh, no, no!
Show us your paper, Bill. Just the rules.
Tessie, open your hand.
No, 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 no.
Come on now. Open your hand.
Yep, it's Tessie, all right.
Mom, I'm going over to the pile of stones, all right?
All right, folks, let's finish. Quickly now.
No, 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 no. It isn't fair. Oh, Bill, Bill, Bill. No, Bill.
It's too late, Tessie. There's nothing I can do.
Come on, Mrs. Delacroix. We better get a good stone before they're all gone.
Oh, Dickie will save one for me.
Well, hurry up. She'll be running soon.
It wasn't fair. There wasn't time. Oh, Bill, Bill, please, Bill!
You heard him, Tessie. Lottery in June. Corn will grow soon.
That isn't true. It isn't true.
Mom, here's a stone for you. Here, Mom.
Oh, that's a nice boy, Dickie. What a nice big stone.
Well, you'll have to all go ahead. I'll catch up with you. Can't run at all with arthritis in my knees.
All right. There's Davy. Davy? Davy, come here.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, here's a little stone for you. Take it.
Sure.
Now, you come along with me, Davy.
Sure, I don't want to miss out on the fun. We got to run after Ma now, huh?
That's right, Davy. Come on.
It isn't fair. Listen, everybody, they didn't give him time. It wasn't fair.
Come on, everybody. Agnes?
Come on, Davy. Throw your stone. Go on. Throw your stone.
Fair. It isn't right. Oh, Bill, 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 you can't let them. Not me. It can't be me. It wasn't fair. They can't do it to me. Agnes, Emily,
go on.
You can't.
Go on, Davy.
Not me.
Davy, now throw your stone.
No, no, not the stones. No, it isn't right. Oh, Davy, Davy, my own baby. Don't.
It was all over by noon. The sun was hot on the square, and the men stood around the blacksmith shop, smoking and talking about planting and tractors and taxes. And the little women gathered in Summers and bought yard goods and patterns and notions. The little children played in the dust, throwing pebbles at each other. The lottery was over for this year. Lottery in June. Corn will grow soon. Next year? Next June 27th? Well, maybe we'll learn. Maybe there'll be no lottery. Maybe we'll begin to reason, to find the truth. Maybe we'll find out we don't have to pick out folks in the lottery just because our fathers and their fathers did it, because it always was that way. Maybe next year there won't be a lottery. It's up to all of us. Chances are, there will be, though.
You have heard The Lottery by Shirley Jackson, whose novel The Hangsman will be published soon. This adaptation was by Ernest Canoy of NBC. The folk music was by Emily Tompkins. Your announcer, Bob Dutton. The director of NBC Presents Short Story is Karen Charlotte. Be with us again 2 weeks from tonight as NBC presents Short Story. On that occasion, a powerful story of machine politics and corruptible men, Shadow of Evil by James Aswell. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Let's get our next talent scout up here. Mrs. Dudley Full. How are you tonight, Mrs. Full?
Very nicely, thank you.
Are you comfortable in there?
Sure am.
Tell me, what do you do besides being Mr. Full's wife?
Well, I work in my husband's business.
Oh, what's his business?
Well, he's a manufacturer of rubber-covered baseballs and softballs.
Rubber-covered baseballs?
Yes, sir.
This I never heard of before.
Well, it's very different. You can play with a ball in all kinds of weather, and it outlasts a leather-covered baseball by many, many innings.
Is that so?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's great. I used to play a little baseball, and I still love it. Did you bring some talent tonight, Mrs. Full?
Yes. I brought a new friend of my husband's and mine, William Hutchinson.
Where does he come from?
Well, he recently moved here to New York with his son, David.
And where did he move here from?
I'm not sure. Somewhere down south, I believe.
How did he get all the way up here?
Well, he's a widower, but he doesn't like to talk about it much. He says he wanted to make a fresh start, so he moved up here to the Big Apple. My husband gave him a job, but he started singing in some of the clubs around town, and he's doing very well.
I see, I see.
Bill went to a talent audition here at CBS about 2 weeks ago, and he won.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Therefore, he wins an appearance on this show, huh?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's bring him out here. Thank you very much, Mrs. Full. The talent is William Hutchinson.
In the shade of the old apple tree, where the love in your eyes I could see, when the voice that I heard, like the song of a bird, seemed to whisper sweet music to me. I could hear the dull buzz of the bee in the blossoms as you said to me. With a heart that is true, I'll be waiting for you in the shade of the old apple tree.
Well, that was very nice. Lovely sentiment, Bill. William Hutchinson, folks. Okay, let's bring out our next talent scout, shall we? Our next talent scout is... Wait a minute. Let me find out this lady's name. How do you do?
How do you do? Do you mind if I call you Arthur?
No. What's your name?
Jean.
Jean. Hello, Jean.
Jean Jansen.
Jean Jansen, huh?
Uh-huh.
You been Swedish?
I suppose so.
That's wonderful. You have a lovely Nordic face. Are you married?
No.
Gee, that's a shame. I am. Who did you bring us, Jean?
Well, I brought Joanne O'Connell, a soprano from Berkeley, California.
Ah.
I think she's great.
Good. What's her background?
Well, she sang several years with the San Francisco Opera Company in the chorus, and she debuted as Olympia in The Tales of Hoffman, and has done a number of roles since. Also, she sang with the Oakland Symphony Orchestra as a soloist on more than one occasion.
Okay, let's see what the gal can do here for us in the Lipton Theater tonight, with Archie Blyer and the symphony behind her, Joanne O'Connell. Thank you, Miss Jansen.
Thank you.
I am a poor wayfaring stranger while traveling through this world of woe. going over Jordan. I am just going over home. I know dark clouds will gather o'er me. I know my pathway's rough and steep, but golden fields lie out before me, where weary eyes no more shall weep. I'm going there to see my mother. She said she'd
What do you say we bring out our next talent scout, all right? Well, Beverly Raymond, is it? Whom did you bring us this evening?
I brought John and Marian Yavis. They're a husband and wife duet, and they are quite wonderful.
Give me that last name again, dear.
Yavis.
Yavis. I never heard of them. John and Mary Yavis?
Yes.
That's a nice name. Well, tell me about them. Where did they meet? How long have they been singing together?
It's really quite a story. I've known Mary since we were little girls. We went to the same schools together. She became a nurse, and she served in the waves as a nurse in the South Pacific during the war. John was wounded during the Battle of Iwo Jima, and he was evacuated to the hospital on Guam, where she was stationed. His leg was injured pretty badly, but as he got better, they started singing together for the other patients.
Remarkable. That is really remarkable.
Yes, and before he left Guam, they had fallen in love and he had proposed to her. They got married as soon as they both got back to the States after the war.
So they've been making beautiful music together ever since.
Yes.
Well, let's go ahead and get the two of them on out here. John and Mary Yavis. Thank you so much for your beautiful voices, and thank you both for your service to your country.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire! From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand could-maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, presents...
X minus one!
Tonight's story, Nightfall, by Isaac Asimov.
Ralph Waldo Emerson speculated, if the stars should appear one night in a thousand years, how would man believe, adore, and preserve for many generations the remembrance of the city of God? This was philosophically interesting. But on the edge of the galaxy, there is a planet which swings on its orbit in a cluster of six suns. These suns hang high in the sky above, never less than two shine down throughout the entire 23.8 hours of the planet's day. The yellow light has burned down on the planet continuously, into the past, till the mind of man runneth not to the contrary. Theramon was a reporter for the Cyro City Chronicle. He'd covered them all, from the night police beat, to politics, to the sports pages. And the city editor wanted him to cover the biggest story of the year, perhaps of all time. 'Twas an interview, a particularly difficult interview. But then, since his first days as a cub, Theramon had specialized in difficult interviews. It cost him bruises, black eyes, and broken bones, but it had gotten him an ample supply of coolness and self-confidence. He didn't expect violence, though, from an astronomer.
You're from that newspaper. Well, you've got a lot of gall coming here.
Now, look, Dr. Eitan, it's only a job.
I've read your paper. You've been riding this observatory for 2 months now. You've attacked me personally. I have nothing to say to you.
Well, this is your chance to get your side into the paper. Look, Dr. Eitan, I'll give it to you straight. 2 months ago, the observatory issued a press statement that the world was coming to an end. Now, that's the same story the cult of the Book of Revelations has been preaching. Now, when a scientist backs that up, it's news.
Our conclusions have nothing to do with the cult. The cult is full of superstition and mysticism. We're scientists.
You've got the people pretty angry.
It doesn't matter.
If I can't get the story from you, I'll have to go somewhere else.
Well, go ahead.
The paper can be pretty rough on someone who doesn't cooperate, Dr. Eitan.
Well, young man, if you're not out of this observatory within 5 minutes, I shall call the police. Now get out!
The reporter walks down the long hall from the observatory. The light filters through the high, clear story windows. The yellow light of gamma, the brightest of the six suns in the planet's sky. Beta is almost at zenith. Its red light floods the landscape to an unusual orange. The planet's sun Alpha is at the antipodes. And now, as gamma sinks below the horizon, the red dwarf sun Beta is alone, grimly alone. It's a short jibe from the observatory to Cyro City, and the red light glares from the highway. The temple of the cult stands hewn from the solid rock of the Dormite Mountains outside the city. And in the courtyards stands Sor, the priestess of the cult.
Woe to the unbelievers! Their souls will rot with the absence of light.
Tell me, your reverence, what will happen? What are you waiting for here?
The day of the coming. It is written in the Book of Revelations. It came to pass that the sun Beta was alone in the sky, and the world was shrunken and cold, and men did assemble in the public squares and highways. Their minds were troubled and their speech confused, for the souls of men awaited the coming of the stars. and the lip of the cave of darkness passed the edge of Beta, and loud were the cries of the men, and there was no light on the surface of the world. And in this blackness, there appeared the stars in countless numbers. And in that moment, the souls of the men departed from them, and their abandoned bodies became even as beasts. From the stars and reached down the heaven's flame, and where it touched, the cities of the world flamed to destruction, so that of man and all the works of man not remained. So it is written.
Dr. Sheeran, you're the only scientist I could find in the city. Where is everybody?
In the hideout.
The hideout?
Yes, but the place bored me. I wanted to be out here where things are getting hot. I want to see the stars the cultists are talking about. Besides, they don't want me at the hideout. I'm too scrawny to survive.
What is the hideout?
Well, we professors have managed to convince a few people that our prophecy of doom is valid. We've got about 3,000 people. They're supposed to hide where the darkness and the stars can't get at them. We hope they'll survive and leave records.
Survive? Survive what?
Oh, there are lots of names for it. The cultists have their myths. I'm a psychologist, not an archaeologist. Well, how true it is, I can't say, but the cultists say that every 2,050 years, all the suns disappear and there is a total darkness. And then they say things called stars appear. Of course, people go mad. They mix all this up with a lot of religio-mystic notions. But that's the central idea.
But that's impossible, isn't it? I mean, there are always at least two suns in the sky, most of the time four or five.
There aren't now. Only Beta.
You mean that there is going to be worldwide darkness tomorrow, that all humankind will go violently insane? What's behind that?
Well, for one thing, the history of civilization of the world. We have located a series of cycles of civilizations comparable to our own, all of which, without exception, were destroyed by fire at the very height of their culture.
But is there any scientific theory behind this which would explain it?
Well, the University Observatory finished their calculations 2 months ago. And tomorrow there'll be an eclipse of Beta so that the planet will become dark. That eclipse comes every 2,049 years. Darkness comes, and maybe those mysterious stars that no one has seen, and then madness, and the end of civilization.
And you, the scientist, expect to live through this at the hideout?
They plan to photograph the eclipse and leave the records. From then, the rest of humanity will know what to expect.
Well, what is there in darkness to drive people mad?
Have you ever experienced darkness, young man?
Well, no, but I know what it is. It's just no light.
Oh, draw the curtain.
Why? What for? If there were four or five suns out there, we might want to cut the light down for comfort, but with only Beta in it.
Ah, that's the point. Just draw the curtain, and then come here and sit down.
All right. I can't see you.
Feel your way.
But I can't see you. I can't see anything.
Do you like it?
No, it's awful. The walls seem to be closing in on me. I keep wanting to push them away.
All right, all right. Draw the curtain back again.
Oh, the light. Do you have a drink?
Right here. Now, that was just a dark room.
Yes, but it really wasn't so bad.
You're afraid.
Just darkness could do that?
This isn't just a metaphysical theory, young man. It's promulgated from observed data. Well, come with me.
Where?
The locked ward down the corridor. Were you at the Sorrow City Centennial Exposition 2 years ago?
I was overseas on assignment.
Well, you remember hearing about the Tunnel of Mystery that broke all records in the amusement area?
Oh, yes. Wasn't there some fuss about that? The Anti-Vice Society had it shut down.
Oh, it was shut down, all right. But the Blue Noses had nothing to do with it. That tunnel was nothing but a mile-long passage through darkness. You rode in a little car, and it took 15 minutes to go through. It was very popular while it lasted.
Popular?
Well, there's a fascination to being frightened when it's part of a game. Absence of light is one of the instinctive human fears. People came out of that 15 minutes of darkness shaking and half dead with fear.
Weren't there some deaths?
Oh, bad hearts. But that wasn't the big danger. Now, which key is this?
Where are we going?
You'll see. No, the heart attacks were actually good for business. But there's something else. Here, I'll show you. I want you to see somebody. Latimer. Latimer?
No, go away.
Latimer, I want you to meet somebody. This is Mr. Theramon.
No, no, go away.
Hello?
He's pushing me. Make him stop pushing me. Go away.
I'm not touching him. What's wrong?
Latimer is afraid, aren't you?
The walls, they're falling in on me. The walls, I've got to get out. I've got to get out. Let me out.
You can't go out, Latimer. It's all right.
I've got to get out. Let me out. Let me out.
At sleeping period, we have to give him a shot of morphine. Otherwise, he'd bat his brains out against the wall.
What's wrong with him?
Nothing. Nothing but 15 minutes in the darkness of the Tunnel of Mystery.
Oh, that's impossible.
One person out of 10 came out of the tunnel that way. That's why we had it shut down.
But why should darkness do that?
It's obvious. Humans cannot exist without light. Longer periods of darkness would obviously be fatal. The scientific theory is that the consciousness of light is necessary for mental activity.
Please, doctor, let me outside. Let me out, please. I can't breathe. They're pushing me. They're always pushing me. I can't stand it.
Well, there you are, Thurman. That's what 15 minutes of darkness will do. Humans just weren't built to operate without light. There are always at least two suns in the sky, most of the time.
Just 15 minutes of darkness.
Now, look out of that window. Imagine darkness everywhere. No light as far as you can see. Black. Everything black. And stars, whatever they are. Can you conceive it? No, your mind wasn't built for that conception. When the real thing comes, you will go mad, completely and permanently. There is no question of it. Tomorrow there won't be a city left standing in the world.
Why should the cities be destroyed?
Well, if you were in darkness, what would you want more than anything else? What would it be that every instinct would call for? Light. And how would you get light?
I don't know.
You'd burn something. They've got to have light. They've got to burn something. And every city in the world will go up in flames. Well, shall we go back to my office, Mr. Theramon, and have another drink?
Through the skies, the red beta, the sun beta shines alone. The wind howls across the city. It is cold, colder than anyone can remember. And as the hour approaches, the reporter goes out and speaks to the man in the street.
Excuse me, I'm from the Chronicle. I'd like to talk to you.
Oh, a reporter, huh? Well, my name is Pallet, with two L's. Remember the two L's, huh?
All right, Mr. Pallet. What's your occupation?
Power technician at the North Division plant.
Uh-huh.
You're making some kind of a survey, huh?
In a way. Where are you going now?
Home for supper.
How about... Well, I mean, what are you going to do tonight?
Oh, you mean about this star stuff? Look, I'll tell you, mister. I got nothing against religion, see? But it don't stand to reason that the end of the world is going to come boom like that. It just don't stand to reason.
Have you read what the scientists say?
Nah, I don't read stuff like that. Only the headlines.
How about the cult?
Well, now, like I say, I've got nothing against religion.
But you don't believe them, either.
Ah, they've always been shouting about doom and sin. Listen... When you've been around as long as I have, you get to know the score. It's all right to preach Judgment Day is coming and all that, but just the same, I'm putting money in the bank.
How about darkness?
About what?
How would you feel if there were no light?
Hey, you crazy? How could there be no light?
Well, suppose all the suns went down at once. Suppose everything was black.
That's crazy. What's the use of supposing something like that? It couldn't happen. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's all. Thank you.
Sure, sure. Oh, look, mister... Remember, Pallet with two L's.
Excuse me, sir, but...
Huh?
I represent the Chronicle, and we're conducting a poll to determine public opinion with regard to the predicted end of the world. How do you feel about it?
All this talk of scientific explanation, it's sinful. That's what it is.
Are you a member of the cult, sir?
Sure I am. Been a member since I was a boy. My daddy was a member, too. I've seen the books. It's all writ down in the books.
Don't you believe the scientist's explanation?
Don't need it. Gonna save my immortal soul. Gonna stay on the mountaintop in a white robe while the stars carry me way to glory. Blessed be the stars. Amen.
What are the stars?
The glory, the breath of the heavens, the spirit of the ultimate. That's what they are.
The observatory has announced that it intends to take pictures of the stars.
Blasphemy. I sold my house. I gave all my money to the poor. Won't need it anymore. I'm going to heaven with the stars. Glory, glory, going with the stars.
The reporter checks the stock exchange, the stores. Business is at a standstill. Doesn't pay to buy anything today, not if the world is going to end tomorrow. There are predictions of economic collapse in the financial section. Layoffs at the factories on the edge of the city. And through the streets, the people will mill and turn, unsure, crying in fear, or shouting with bravado. The story isn't here in the city. And so, as the hour approaches, the reporter goes again to the observatory, high in the hills.
Now look, Dr. Eitan, if you are right, if the world is going to be destroyed, what is the difference that I stay here, observe, and take notes?
Nothing, I suppose. You will be in the way. We have work to do.
If I stay out of the way?
Hello, hello. Ooh, this place is like a morgue. It's freezing outside. The wind is enough to hang icicles on your nose. Beta doesn't seem to give any heat at all, the distance it is.
Why aren't you in the hideout, Sheeran?
Me? I'm part of the race that isn't worth perpetuating, or who's got a bottle?
No alcohol today. It'd be too easy to get my technicians drunk. I can't afford to tempt them. All right, Theremin. You can stay. Keep out of the way.
Thank you, Doctor.
Well, gentlemen, ladies, I think it's time we took our positions. The observatory dome is up these stairs.
After you, Doctor. What is that?
Open the dome, quick!
What is it?
It's the plates, the photographic plates. They're all smashed.
There she is, occultist!
She's going for the telescope. After her!
All right! I've got her!
Let go!
No!
Let go! Must be destroyed! It must be!
It's all right. She didn't harm anything. Let her up.
That's the High Priestess. I was talking to her yesterday.
All right. What do you want?
Nothing that you would give me of your own free will.
I made a bargain with the cult to give me certain data that you had. In return, I promised to prove the essential truth of the creed.
There was no need to prove that. It stands proven by the Book of Revelations.
I offered scientific backing for you believers.
You made of the darkness and the stars a natural phenomenon and removed all its real significance. That was blasphemy.
The facts exist.
Your facts are a fraud and a delusion.
How do you know?
I know.
I suppose you think in trying to warn the world against the menace of madness, we are placing souls in jeopardy, huh? Well, we haven't succeeded, if that makes you feel better.
Your devilish instruments must be destroyed. We obey the will of the stars.
Someone call the police in Sarrow City.
There's no time for that. Let me handle this. The eclipse is only a few minutes away. Look, you, will you give your word of honor to cause no trouble?
I will not.
Listen, just as soon as the eclipse starts, we're going to take you and put you in a closet with the door closed, and you will stay there. Then you won't see the darkness, and you won't see the stars. And that means a loss of your immortal soul, according to the cult. All right, will you give your word of honor?
You have it. You will all be damned for your deeds of today.
Look! Look at Beta!
The eclipse has started. You can see the blackness against Beta. Get busy on those cameras. Check the exposures very carefully.
You're shaking, Mr. Theremin.
Yes, I don't feel very well.
You're not losing your nerve.
No, I'm just not used to it.
You could probably make the hideout.
I have been assigned to cover a story. I intend to cover it.
Ooh, professional honor?
Yes!
Yes! Allah, so fanit, rat rock. Allah Sophanit Radrock.
What is that?
The cultist.
Allah Sophanit.
That's the Book of Revelations.
Radrock.
I don't understand it.
She is chanting some old cycle language. The Book of Revelations was originally written in it. There are probably 2 million people in Sorrow City who are trying to join the cult. One gigantic revival.
How do the cultists manage to keep the Book of Revelations going from cycle to cycle if everyone goes mad? Who wrote the book?
There are some people who don't see the stars. The blind, those who drink themselves into a stupor, and children, to whom the world as a whole is too new and too strange for them to be frightened at stars and darkness. They would have memories. And that, combined with the confused, incoherent babbling of the mad, formed the basis for the Book of Revelations. Oh, the cult will be riding high down there in the city.
Dr. Sheeran, I've just heard from the hideout on the private line.
Oh, they're in trouble?
They are safe, but the city is a shambles. You have no idea.
Well, it'll get worse. What are you shaking about, Dr. Eitan? How do you feel?
You don't understand. The cultists are rousing the people to storm the observatory, promising them immediate entrance into grace, promising them salvation, promising them anything.
How long till the total eclipse?
An hour. I'm going back to check those cameras.
Well, it's a gamble. It'll take time to get a mob out here. If the darkness comes first, we're all right. Oh, look at Beta.
It's cut in half. Half of it is black.
Yes. Getting darker. An interesting phenomenon. Oh, my. My collar is suddenly tight. Are you having any difficulty in breathing?
No, why?
Difficulty in breathing is one of the first symptoms. We have experimented.
I'm cold. It seemed to be getting colder.
Yes, so we'd better keep our minds on something else. One of the astronomers has a theory about the stars. He thinks they may be suns that are too far away to see in the light. He developed a fantasy about a planet revolving around one sun. It's a mathematical possibility. Of course, there couldn't be any life. Part of the planet would always be dark and without light. Well, it's obvious. Without light, there can't be any life.
It's time for the artificial light. We can't read the instruments.
Artificial light?
One of the researchers at the university worked it out. It's animal grease packed around a wick. Here, I'll light one.
Why, it's beautiful. Yellow light. After 4 hours of red, it's beautiful. Light.
The dome is quiet. The priestess in her yellow robe sways slowly as her lips move in the ancient tongue. Over and over, she whispers the invocation to the stars. The technicians hunch over the instruments, and the sky gradually turns a horrible, deep purple red. And the air grows denser. Dusk, like a palpable entity, enters the room. And the dancing circle of yellow light about the torches etches itself into ever sharper distinction against the ever-gathering grayness beyond. Outside, Beta is a mere smoldering splinter, taking a last look at the world. The western horizon in the direction of the city is lost in darkness, and along the highway to the observatory surges a menacing, shadowy mass.
The mob from the city. They're coming.
How long till total eclipse?
15 minutes. But they'll be here in 5.
We'll hold them off. Come on, Theremin, downstairs.
But there's no light down there.
We have to block the door. Come on.
I can't breathe. I can't go down there.
Take a torch. We'll take light with us. Come on. Eitan.
I'm here. Did you bar the door?
They won't get in.
All right, now, everybody. 1 minute till totality. 1 minute. Just before totality, I'm changing the plate. That will leave one of you for each camera. You all know about times of exposure. Now remember, don't try to look for good shots. And if you feel yourself going, get away from the camera.
It's dark. It's getting dark. Sheeran, where are you? I can't see you, Sheeran.
I'm right here.
30 seconds.
Look out, the priestess!
I can't see her!
And the wicked shall perish, and the souls of the true believers shall be transported in glory to the stars.
You can see her against the torch.
Don't let her get to the telescope.
From the stars, there reached down the heavenly flame, and where it touched, the cities of the world flamed to utter destruction.
Grab her!
You shall not
take care of her.
The stars! The stars!
5 seconds till totality. 4, 3, 2, 1.
The sky is black, and through it shine the stars. 30,000 minute suns shine down in soul-searing splendor. It is more frightening in its awful indifference than the bitter wind that shivers across the horrible, cold, bleak world.
The stars.
It's dark. Dark.
The walls are coming in on me. They're coming in. Light.
Darkness forever and ever.
Light.
And ever.
Light.
Into the walls.
Light.
They're breaking in. We did not know.
Light.
On the horizon, in the direction of the city, a crimson glow begins growing. 1,000 fires strengthen in brightness. That is not the glow of the sun. 1,000,000 fires, as a world mad in the darkness screams in terror for the light. The night has come again.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Nightfall by Isaac Asimov, adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Your narrator was Ori Cruz, Don Pulaski speaking. X-1 was directed by Karen Charlotte and is an NBC Radio Network production.
It's groomed for your interest. Weekday, NBC Radio.
Well, wasn't that something? Sure does seem like old times, really old times. And it seems like we've heard some really great talent on our show tonight. And, as measured by your applause this evening, you've clearly decided our winner for tonight's show. Your level of response to him obviously means that Guy Masters has won your hearts this evening. He will be coming on my daytime show for an extended performance next Monday. Please tune in for that broadcast to enjoy more of Guy's fine singing. Thank you. Since you've been such a wonderful audience, I thought I would sing an interesting little song for you to finish up the evening. And of course, I have to bring out my little friend here to keep me company while I sing. Of course, I got a great deal on this ukulele. I bought it with no strings attached. Well, I'm not sure what inspired me to pick this particular song. I guess I just felt burning desire to sing it. Okay, Archie.
Hit it.
When you hear that bell go ding-a-ling, all join round and sweetly you must sing. And when the verse is through, in the chorus all join in.
There'll be a hot time in the old town tonight.
When you hear that bell go ding-a-ling, all join round and sweetly you must sing. And when the verse is through, in the chorus all join in. There'll be a hot time in the old town tonight. There'll be a hot time in the old town tonight.
Good night, everybody.
What Are the Odds has been a special production of the On the Air Radio Players, sponsored by the Henrico County Department of Recreation and Parks. The voices for tonight's show were Albert Allen, Julie Canfield, Joanne Colbert-Gunn, Ori Cruz, Bob Dutton, Jana Francis Fisher, Dan Gerstenlauer, Elizabeth Howell, Maureen Leister, Dale Leopold, Brian Martin, Reagan McKenna, Jack Mooney, Marsha Mosley, Lois Curley, John Pulaski, Patrick Rains, Brian Stanley, Emily Hopkins, Nicarla Webb, John Witt. Our sound effects wizards have been Dan Gerstenlauer, Reagan McKenna, Jack Mooney, Marsha Mosley, Lois Curley, John Pulaski. Our director has been Karen Charlotte. Production manager was James Nygren. Vocal director, Ann Parr Regan. Music has been furnished by Logan Byam and Emily Tompkins on the fiddle. Tonight's sound recording engineer has been Devin Langston. What Are the Odds was edited by Bob Dutton and Karen Charlotte. What Are the Odds will soon be available as a podcast on our website, www.otarp.com, where you can also download recordings of past shows, including Christmas All Around the Dial, Radio Goes to War, and Fibber McGee and Friends. Be sure to join us again June 3rd and 4th as a studio audience here at the Glen Allen Cultural Arts Center when we present the latest and best in our annual scriptwriting contest, You Heard It Here First. This is your announcer, Marsha Mosley, speaking. Good night and happy listening.